Good afternoon, everyone. And welcome to this Friday, March 20th, 2015 meeting of the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development. We actually have a fairly full agenda today. The first issue that we're going to address are two bills in a public hearing that have to do with studded tires. What I'd like to do is open both of these hearings at the same time. I know we have people who want to address them, and we have our good representatives here to speak to this bill. So I will open the hearing on House Bill 2552 and House Bill 3102. Please come join us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I'm State Representative Mitch Greenlee, House District 33, which is Northwest Portland and the hills of Northwest Portland and out into Washington County. Very happy to be here today to speak to both of the two bills. The two bills are, one is a more radical approach to the problem and the other is a more conservative approach to the problem. Strangely, I'll be favoring the more conservative approach of both my bills, which is an odd place for me to be.
Only when you sit next to me.
That's true. The issue is a very simple one. We have a history in this state of using studded snow tires. And it is clear by every account, and we now have a pretty good study from ODOT, that it creates an expense. And it chops up the roads pretty well and causes us to spend a lot of money to deal with the negative effects of studded snow tires. Technology is moving away from studded snow tires, and somewhere downstream, we won't be facing these problems because they'll essentially be outmoded. But in the meantime, they are still available. Now, there are people in the state who believe they need studded snow tires where they live and where they work. And in fact, until 2.5 years ago, I lived at 1,100 feet on a 10% grade where I had studded snow tires because there were a few days a year that studded snow tires were the better alternative to not studded snow tires. I think, consequently, the bill to outlaw studded snow tires is probably not reasonable because it's appropriate for some people to say, I really need them in my life. I live in a place where where studded snow tires are important. I don't want to be using chains all the time, and on some days, studded snow tires are very helpful. To which I say, okay, let's go along with that. But in a sense of fairness, it seems to me that people who want to believe they need to use studded snow tires should pay some part of the cost of the excess damage to roads caused by those tires. So House Bill 2552 provides a way for people to put back into the highway repair funds amount of money that will somehow offset some of the costs that those studded tires are. I've estimated that if we had a fee of about $35 per tire at the time of purchase of tires, a little different than what the bill says exactly, but if we had about a $35 per tire fee, that would offset probably about half of the cost of tires. It would be a shared amount for the people who use the tires versus the people who pay other taxes to pay for the roads. I think that kind of a model would have two advantages. One, it would be an equity issue. People who want to use tires ought to pay some share of that cost. But the other thing that might even be more important is that it would enhance the market forces moving people away from the purchase of studded tires. It would provide the extent to which you believe economics, and I studied economics in college. I believe it a little bit, but not entirely, that these market forces would help drive technology in the way it ought to be. It would make studless tires and all-weather tires more feasible than buying studded tires that would move us in the right direction over time. So I'm here to ask you to, I'm glad you're hearing this bill. If you have an interest in moving it further. We'll be glad to work with other folks. You'll hear some more testimony today to move this bill along in a way that would be a sensible and feasible way. You also have a letter from Commissioner Novick in Portland asking that if we don't want to pass a state bill, we do away with the preemption that stops cities from charging a tax on studded snow tires. So far, we haven't been able to find that preemption, but if we did, we'll be back talking to you about it if that's the case.
Thank you, Representative. Why don't we hear both representatives, and then we'll open the panel for questions. Representative Kenny Geyer, thank you for being here.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, committee members. I'm Alyssa Kenny Geyer, House District 46, parts of Southeast and Northeast Portland, other side of the river from him, if you're coming up from the south. I'm actually to your right. But I started out with the idea of the ban because I actually thought that perhaps a fee would take 3/5 majority, and when I realized that wasn't true, I actually think that Representative Greenlick's idea of charging a user fee for those that are want to have the option of buying tires but should pay some portion, I would actually argue that they pay the full portion of the cost to the roads. There is an ODOT report. The last one that had been done, I think, was in the early 2000s, and there was another one that was just released in December 2014 that we've asked to put on OLIS. I'm not sure if it's there yet. I know OLIS has been going up and down on and offline the last couple of hours, but it's an excellent report. And in it, it talks about having gone from 16% of drivers had used studded tires to now 8% in 2014, and it's projected at 4%. So it is dropping rapidly.
It is up on OLIS, by the way.
Okay, great. So it is dropping rapidly. That's great. They are projecting that between 2012 and 2022, it will cost roughly $4 million a year in added costs because of the studs tearing up the asphalt. This is both a maintenance cost that is unfortunate that we have to pay. I know that you're looking at a transportation package and looking for every which way between gas taxes and vehicle registration and everything else. And so I think this is a particularly good time to look at this bill, both in terms of speeding up market forces and getting more people to go to the emerging technology that really works far better than studded tires in most circumstances, except for right at the freezing level. That is the one place where the studded tires still perform slightly better. But in every other circumstance, and many states have gone away, even Minnesota, I think Minnesota has actually banned it. There are states that have totally gone away from studded tires because of the technology being so good now with the blizzards, the non-studless winter tires, non-studded winter tires. This $4 million cost per year, I want to note, is only to the state highway system. It's probably why Commissioner Novick sent something in. That does not even account for the cost to cities and counties. So I think everything that we can do policy-wise to encourage people to take, to have a different choice, and if they do, for their own set of circumstances, want to choose to continue to use studded tires, to pay a user fee that, in my view, would be the full amount of what it costs for us to have to repair roads because of the use of studded tires.
Great. Thank you very much. We have questions for the good representatives.
So I might ask. Lively. Thank you, Chair. I might ask questions. So we're talking about a user fee for the state highways because it would be a user fee. And I'm just asking a question relating to the letter we got about the preemption for local governments. And so I'm trying to understand. So would you recommend, if we do such a thing, that local governments not be allowed to also charge a fee or that for use of studded tires?
I would just adding a presumption if there is none. I mean, a preemption if there is none now.
Okay.
But we could also create a formula. I mean, we had the study of ODOT, which we asked ODOT to do over the past years, and we had that study, and we were featuring what the impact would be on the state highways, but we didn't have a sense of what that would be. But you can imagine a fee-sharing model that would give the cities and the towns some component of that.
Thank you.
That fee.
I'll just add also that one of the ideas that's been presented to us is that rather than ODOT collect all the fees from when these are sold per tire, that and collect it and then spend it on highways, they might also look at the different ODOT regions. I believe there are 5 ODOT regions. And so all of the revenue that is collected from fees from a particular region could be directed to go back to that region. And you could add flexibility to, you know, allow ODOT to decide whether they want to share with cities and counties. I think the more we can give local control over these, because I think Eastern Oregon is different from the Willamette Valley, and I'm all for having more local control. I do think that the principle of trying to both incentivize people not to use a technology that's causing a lot of wear and tear, and then having a user fee as part of the transportation package of how we're trying to deal with our very significant infrastructure needs is very timely. And in addition to that, while this comes up year after year, having this study that was just released in December 2014 along with the package makes this very timely conversation.
Thank you very much. Any other comments or questions? Thank you so much. We have other
Thank
people
you,
who have signed
Chair.
Up, to, you're very welcome. Nice to have you here. Mr. Mather, Mr. Brown, and Mr. Reinhart, please. Mr. Reinhart, I have you signed up twice.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to cross one of you off. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us in no particular order, please. Thank you for being here.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for ODOT. I was in front of you about a month ago talking about the report on studded tires. I thought today I'd just give you a quick recap of that and just be available for any technical questions that you may have about either of the bills. Remember, the previous study that we had was done or published in 2000, was actually based on data that went as far back as 1995. So we have about 20 years difference in data. The main focus of the study was a phone survey that was done just to see the usage rates that have changed during that time period. Back in 95, the usage rates were about 16% of the vehicles used studded tires. Today, it's 4% of the studded tires. In Western Oregon, that ranges from about 3% in the Portland area to around 1% in Southern Oregon. East of the Cascades varies from 11 to 13% of the vehicles use studded tires. In the survey, we asked people why they stopped using studded tires. The most frequent responses included things such as, we don't need them anymore. We've switched to studless tires. We now have four-wheel drive vehicle. We don't drive in bad weathers, or acknowledgement that studded tires damage the highway. One of the interesting things, again, we found was of those using studded tires, more than 50% started using them more than 10 years ago, which I think, again, reinforces the decline in the use and the users. The damage to the system, as I described last time, is really confined to two major areas, the Portland area and Central Oregon. The annual damage we estimate to be about $8.5 million a year. Our study just focused on the state system, did not look at the local system, so both these bills would impact not just the state highway system, but the local system as well. The cost of the study was about $125,000, and so one of the bills would ask us to do a study. I would describe this study as a very minimal study. If we were going to do studies that included cities and county roads, we'd have to do a much more extensive study to accomplish a number that included city and state, or yeah, city and county roads. With that, I'll take any questions.
Thank you. I think we'll just complete the panel and then open for questions if anybody doesn't mind.
Just talk.
Gentlemen?
I'm Ken Brown. I'm from Newport, Oregon. My family owns two tire stores in Newport and Toledo. Mm-hmm. I'm also the immediate past president of the Tire Industry Association for the North America. And I'm past president for the Northwest Tire Dealers Association. As an owner of a small tire dealership with family, you know, it's been in it since the early 60s. We've seen the studded tires start, and we've been with them all along. I've sat here amongst numerous times in front of this committee to discuss the same matter every couple years. And, you know, as a tire dealer, we're not totally opposed to a fee. We don't want to see it. We don't want to see a tax onto those consumers, especially with the proliferation of sizes today. The sizes that are predominantly used, that we sell, and studded tires are more on the older cars the lower income people are going to be using, and it's going to be a burden upon the lower income person to have to pay that tax on top of the price of the tire that they already don't want to buy. The newer cars today do use the high friction or studless brand tires. And they use that predominantly because there's not a studded tire made for those sizes. It's easier to make a high friction tire than upon a green casing without having to do a special casing for a studded tire, because a studded tire is manufactured in a totally different process than a studless tire or high friction tire is. So that's the reason for the change in that. Newer cars don't have those sizes. So as the new car, new technology, and it's not new technology, it started in the mid 1980s. It is not something that just has blossomed upon us. 12 years ago, I sat up here and brought in a cross-section of that tire for the committees to see, and we're discussing it again. It's nothing new. We went out riding drives and saw how that it performs almost as good as a studded tire, but not as good as a studded tire in icy conditions, especially Cascade Locks area, the Bend area. On the coastal areas going up over Highway 26 where we see those icy conditions, it's not going to perform as good there, but it's going to perform pretty darn good. But it, as the cars have progressed, it's going to take care of itself. You know, it's a declining portion of our sales. We sell more studless than we do studded tires because the cars are just made that way. So I don't want to see a total ban, because that's a ban on something that's a safety device, and I hate to ban a safety device, and that's what a studded tire is. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair McEwen and members of the committee. My colleague here said it very well. I'm Dave Reinhardt, for the record, here today representing Les Schwab Tires. And on behalf of our customers, Les Schwab opposes both of these bills. Les Schwab believes that Oregon drivers should be able to choose the tires that best fit their driving needs. The recent DOT study, which we've talked about a little bit here today, confirms that while use is decreasing, some drivers still select them given their needs, and for very good reason. Thanks for the opportunity to make our views known on this.
Sure. Thank you. Questions for this panel? Comments?
I have one.
Representative Bentz and then Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Chair. All the numbers that I was just looking at in your report suggest that the damage done in Region 5 is $86,000 a year, whereas the damage done in, I think, Portland and probably the Bend area was closer to $3.5 million in each area, maybe $4 million. Am I reading those numbers correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, yeah, I can't cite the exact numbers. I don't have them in front of me, but they sound right. Of that $8.5 million that I cited in total damage, well over 90% of that is in Central Oregon or in the Portland metro area. So your numbers sound correct.
And then follow up.
Yes, sir.
I think from your previous testimony, the suggestion was that our roads in those parts of the state, not Bend and not Portland, wear out of their own accord by weather and other things far before damage from these tires would be sufficient to require some sort of repair. Do I remember that correctly?
Madam Chair, Representative Bentz, that's correct. Highways wear out for a number of reasons, studded tires being one of those. And in our report, we tried to isolate those that failed prematurely because of studded tires and associated that $8.5 million damage to that premature wearing only and not to other factors.
Thank you.
Representative McLean.
The only question I had was, I don't know your name.
Right, Ken Brown.
Thank you. What year does it, the model start where they don't have studded tires made for them anymore?
It varies. It started predominantly in the early 2000 models.
Okay.
Some of the cars came out with, you know, the low profile 18-inch and, yeah, and 17-inch stuff that they just did not manufacture a snow tire for those.
Thank
you.
But
they do make the studless or the high friction tires. So.
Okay.
Sir, a number of us who live on the coast who spend time in Central Oregon in the winter were of the studded tire generation, and I have observed a lot of people moving away from them as those all-weather tires that we now have on our cars work very, very well. I guess the other question I was going to that was a comment, but the question is I see a lot more SUV-type cars on the road now than I used to. Is that part of what's what's helping this transition along with the decline in studded tire use, too? It's just that people are picking different types of cars to drive?
Well, the MUV type vehicle, the midsize utility vehicle, right. You know, the Honda, excuse me, the Honda RAV4, Toyota CRV, that type of, or those backwards, those type of vehicles are all-wheel drive. And of course, it's mandated by law now that any vehicle manufactured has stability control systems. And we also have four-wheel anti-lock brake systems on them, which those all add to your safety, but also your drivability of the car. And so, yes, that's going to push you towards more of a more of a studless type tire and that type of thing. So that's going to show that. But again, those vehicles take a tire that does not have a studded tire available.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's contributing to the decline in use of the studded tire.
The industry's taking care of ourselves. So.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you for being here. We have
thank
one
you.
Other panel I think I'd like to call up. Elizabeth Edwards.
Yes.
Alan Brown.
Yes.
Welcome, Ms. Edwards.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, Elizabeth Edwards on behalf of the City of Portland. You have before you a letter from Portland City Commissioner Steve Novick.
See it up on all of us, too. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. I'm constantly just a little bit late, so I want to make sure that you have the material. And we're here today to state our support for addressing the important issue of the disproportionate wear and tear on roadways due to studded tires, and want to express our thanks to Representative Greenlick and Representative Kenny Geyer for bringing this issue before you, and also thanks to the committee for having this hearing. As you heard from ODOT, who updated the committee a couple weeks ago on their most recent study, there's an estimated $27 million in total damage in 2012 due to studded tire use.
Sorry, could you repeat that number?
$27 million.
In what time frame?
In 2012, there was an estimated $27 million in total damage due to studded tire use statewide.
In 1 year? Which seems... I'm sorry.
No, absolutely.
Just want to make sure we're having... You caught my attention, Ms. Edwards.
Madam Chair, again, Paul Mather, Highway Division Administrator for ODOT. That number she's citing is the total damage. The number that I cited is the net damage or the premature damage to the pavement. So both numbers, they're a different.
Thank you for the clarification. Yep. Does everybody?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Please continue.
And it's the premature damage is that $8.5 million reduction in the pavement's useful life, and over half of that, as Representative Banks noted, occurs in the Portland metro region. And so, you know, ODOT's study took into account state roads, not city or county roads, but it clearly showed that different parts of the state experience varying impacts as a result of studded tire use. And the Portland metro area was most significantly negatively impacted by their use, largely due to the high volume of traffic on our roadways. And I would just note that while we don't have specific data for wear rates on Portland-owned streets, we do know that about approximately 95% of our roadways are asphalt, which experience a higher wear rate than concrete, which is also noted in the report. The letter that you have before you from the commissioner contains several suggestions on possible ways to address the issue on a regional basis rather than statewide. This is not something that we would want to be an urban-rural issue. In there, he talks about, you know, vehicle registration fee, perhaps something at point of sale or something working at the county level. Right now, when looking at preemptions, there's not a specific line in the ORS that says city governments or county governments are preempted. However, the state regulates studded tire use, and the state is supreme to local governments, and so we feel that the field is occupied when our lawyers look at it, and that is the equivalent of a preemption on local governments entering that space. Just to clarify that issue, if we were to do something on a local level, we would do it in such a way that it just impacted, and if we were given the opportunity to do something on the local level, it would be in such a way that it would just impact vehicles registered there, not folks traveling through the region. anyway, wanted to bring this forward to your attention, have the conversation. Happy to answer any questions and really appreciate the opportunity.
Thank you. Yes, Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So would you be thinking of this in terms of like metro-wide jurisdiction rather than just City of Portland?
Chair McKeown, Representative Gorsuch, ideally it would be on a metro-wide basis. That way you have enough of a geographic footprint for folks that are using those roads that, you know, someone's not just traveling across the city border to go to Gresham or Troutdale or someplace else to get their tires and then using them on the roadways.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards. Representative Benz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the indication, I'm guessing, I'm assuming that somewhat, is that older people are using studded snow tires because they have difficulty putting chains on. And so would the City of Portland, if you had this power, try to take that into account? Because some folks really have little choice but to have this kind of tire for their concerns about their safety, particularly they may not drive very much, but nonetheless still drive. How would you protect them from the higher cost, given the fact they're using them for safety purposes?
Chair McKeown, Representative Benz, thank you very much for that question. That would be an issue for Portland City Council, but I think it would be something that they would take very much to heart. Safety is, especially transportation safety, is very important to City Council. You've seen me here before on safety issues, and I'd be happy to follow up with your office after conferring with Commissioner Novick and other members of City Council on that issue.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Edwards, and please thank Commissioner Novick for his interest in this matter.
Thank you.
I will be closing both hearings on House Bill 2552 and House Bill 3102. And since Representative Davis, Vice Chair Davis, is in another hearing waiting to testify, I think what we will do, Ms. Joyce, if you don't mind, is just having you come up to do your tutorial on license plates, which we are so looking forward to today.
Sounds very academic.
Chair McKeown. Okay, that's fine. Chair McKeown and members of the committee, Amy Joyce from the Department of Transportation. Thank you for calling me up early so it's not just you and I and the administrator.
There we go. Thank you. We have a captive audience, don't
Absolutely.
We?
Absolutely. That's fantastic. So I was asked to come in and give a brief overview of the license plate program in Oregon. You have a number of license plate bills coming up on Monday, and so this is an opportunity to talk about how we do fundraising license plates in Oregon, some of the challenges and concerns that go along with that. So I'll start out briefly with a little bit of history. Oregon has about 3.2 million passenger vehicles at this time. Maybe about 10% of those have one of these fundraising plates. That seems to be a consistent percentage across time. About 10% of people are willing to pay for this. Oregon's got two programs for fundraising plates. There's the specialty plate program and the group plate program. That becomes important down the line. It sounds a little esoteric right now, but two different programs in the statute. Going back in history, 1993, the Oregon Trail plate, $5 extra, got you a set of plates. They sold about 400,000 sets of those plates. Then in 1993, the legislature also established this group plate program, and the idea there is that it was an administrative program run by DMV. You didn't have to come to the legislature to get a plate, and it involved veterans, institutions of higher learning, and nonprofit groups. Again, come to DMV, set up the program, and get your license plate. From 2001 to 2003, there were three new specialty plates introduced. That was Salmon Plate, Crater Lake Plate, and the Cultural Trust Plate. In 2003, during the legislative session, nine different legislators introduced nine different specialty plate bills. And so the Senate Transportation Committee took it upon itself to kind of rein in the plate situation in Oregon. And rather than passing any of the bills that session, instead brought the plate situation under control. And those controls were limiting to only three specialty plates at one time. And the law says that if the legislature opts to add a new specialty plate, they must also identify a plate to be retired. Since that time, you'll notice that no plates have been retired. The statute merely changes the number as to how many can be on the books at any one time. another change in the statute was that this group license plate had minimum sales requirements. Those were increased to make sure that some of these plates were selling and not just sitting in the storage room at DMV. And it was also converted so that only passenger vehicles could have these unique plates. They used to be available on motorhomes and trailers and things. That led to a lot of plate stock at DMV, so just to passenger vehicles. So since the 2003 legislature, which reined in the plates, we've added two new specialty plates, Pacific Wonderland and Wine Country. So I'm going to do a quick, and there we're talking about, sorry, my PowerPoint, I'm behind, 2003 reining in the plate programs. So this is a bit of a comparison of specialty and group plate programs. Under specialty plates, there's no restriction. Whoever the legislature wants to give a plate to, they can give a plate to. Group plates, it's restricted, again, universities, colleges, nonprofits, and veterans groups. Specialty plate, you've got a unique background. Group plates, limited background. What we also have are some hybrids that have gone through the legislature. Share the Road is the most noticeable one, the most popular one. It's technically a group plate, but through the legislature got a unique background. Startup costs are quite different, much more expensive for a specialty plate. That's why some folks go with the group. The group plate has those sales minimums. In the first year, they have to sell 1,000 plate sets, or they don't get back a $10,000 application fee that is part of their startup costs. And in addition, every year they have to sell or renew 500 plate sets, or they go inactive. Group plates, one of the disadvantages there, they're not issued from the field office. You can't go into the field office and walk out with one. They're not displayed in the field offices. They're all handled at headquarters. And group plates, you're not available to get custom or vanity configuration. They're just four letters and that's it. So those are some of the differences. And then again, the hybrid situation, Share the Road, Fallen Officer, and the Keep Kids Safe plate, which I'll talk again about in a minute, again with a unique background. So that's what we have today. So we see quite a lot of plates. Over the top, those are existing group plates. Down on the left are the existing specialty plates. In the middle, existing vet plates. We have, I believe that's 28 different veteran type plates. Over to the left there, the groups that have gone inactive. They didn't meet the sales minimums, but we still have some in stock. And over to the right, those that have been retired. Included there is Keep Kids Safe plate, approved by the legislature just 2 or 3 years ago, and didn't get their application feedback for lack of sales, and then was retired after 2 years, again, for lack of sales. And that was a plate that was started to provide funds for child abuse prevention. So again, here are the specialty plates that we have, along with the standard tree plate. These are examples of the nonprofit and higher education plates that are still available. These are just some of the veteran-related plates that are available. And this is what the chart looks like now if the five new plates that are proposed this session would come into being. So four more over on the specialty plate side, and then one of them is drafted as a group plate with a unique background. So that's what that looks like if we add five new plates for fundraising for this session. This is a chart that shows sales of specialty plates the year before and the year after a new specialty plate is added. And the point to this plate is that what we've noticed over time is that that 10% number of folks who are willing to pay extra for one of these plates is fairly consistent. So what happens really is when you add another specialty plate, you're sort of frequently siphoning off folks who had a different specialty plate before, different group plate before, and now they moved to another one. So you'll see in 2003, when Crater Lake really kind of got up and running, Salmon Plate went down. In 2009 to 2010, we added another plate, Pacific Wonderland. All of the other plates went down. From 2011 to 2012, we added Wine Country. Again, all of the other plate sales went down. So by adding more plates of this type, what the numbers tend to show is that you're sort of digging into the sales to the other entities. So just some more points about kind of some of the situations with plates. Law enforcement over time has expressed concern. The plate proliferation leads to some difficulties in identifying what plate belongs to what state. This is a nationwide problem. That's a conversation among law enforcement nationwide. It especially becomes problematic with some of the designs with new technology and license plate readers used for law enforcement. It's problematic. And another issue, too, when I talked about it at the very beginning, you know, the point of a license plate fundamentally is vehicle registration, proof of vehicle registration, and assisting in law enforcement. So when you add on to that other things that are not necessarily the core mission of the department, and our core missions at DMV are protecting the ownership interests of vehicle owners, individuals, and financial institutions, helping to protect the safety of the road, and one of our core missions is raising funds for the highway fund to put pavement on the road, build and maintain the system. DMV acts as a collection agent for the highway fund. By doing things that are not associated with that core message, we do sort of move administratively things away from that core effort to other reasons. Now, there are lots of things that the legislature has had DMV do. We help people register to vote. We help people identify that they want to be an organ donor. We do some other regulations, and we also are a collection point for all of those different very good and worthy causes. So that's an overview of Oregon's plate program, and I welcome your questions.
No, but that it's very helpful to have the overview.
It is.
Any questions?
Well,
Representative McLean.
I'm glad for the information. It's really good, and I think you put in perspective the fact that we do a lot of different things for different aspects of our community, and that we have major roles and we have minor roles, and I think that's really helpful as well. And I think that we have to always look at administration costs and making sure that we're not diluting, you know, major functions. But I do think there's time where integration of programs, you know, makes some sense. And, you know, I didn't know too much about the statewide Fallen Hero and, you know, some of those different types of road signs and license plates until I came to this committee a couple weeks ago. And yet I watched people come in here that were greatly impacted and were greatly affected because they had an opportunity to show something about people they cared for, about respecting service that had been given. So I just think it's important for us to remember to try and balance our representation and balance our improvements to community needs. And so, but I really appreciate this. It's very concise, very concise.
Representative Bentz.
Chair, is the current situation such that if someone wants a specialty plate, they have to come to us, or can they come to the department and work it out?
Chair McEwen, Representative Bentz, the current situation is that if someone wants a group plate with the standard tree background or the existing backgrounds, that is still a program that can be done administratively. Mm-hmm. The only reason to come to the legislature is for a specialty plate. Or if a group wants that unique background, that is something that is outside any administrative ability by the department and requires a bill.
Follow up.
Representative Bentz.
So the Trailblazers, I see you have them here. If they don't, can they be placed under a group plate? Fans of the Trailblazers, for example.
Chair McEwen and Representative Bentz, the Blazers could go to DMV and administratively acquire a plate as long as they do it under the foundation where they're a 501c3. That's an existing ability to get a group plate. Now, one of the things that happens with that is what gets put on the plate. And with a 501c3 nonprofit, there's a name or a word that would be stamped into the plate, not a logo, not a design.
Follow up?
Yes, sir.
So if they wanted to put the design on, they have to go the specialty plate route. What was the thinking that specialty plates had to go through the legislature?
Chair McEwen and Representative Bentz, I would have to take an educated guess to say that in 93 the legislature created that group plate process, and that in 2001, when the first one of these came forward, there was no mechanism to create this unique background. So it was something that was created brand new out of whole cloth in 2001, and since then, the two have gone along parallel.
And a follow-up?
Yes.
So if we wanted to, rather than address this each time, we could somehow delegate this all back to the department by modifying the specialty plate process, and if we chose.
Chair McEwen and Representative Bentz, that's true.
And follow-up?
Yes.
Does that pose any particular problems in your mind, or would you want restrictions in place, or what would you want if we were to do that?
Chair McEwen and Representative Bentz, I think it does present some issues. I think some restrictions being put in place would be very helpful. I know there gets to be quite a bit of excitement about new plates in this building, and that excitement, I think, would exist at our agency as well, and the ability to resist that excitement may be difficult, even unless there were some fairly tight restrictions in the statute.
Hmm. Yes, Vice Chair Gorsuch.
I want to follow up on that. So is there a special committee, or how would such decisions be made within DMV?
Chair McEwen and Representative Gorsuch, I'm not sure how that would happen. I hadn't put any thought into assuming the role. Presumably it won't be me deciding who gets
to
play.
Put her on the spot. Representative Gorsuch, Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Well, so follow up. So you don't have to answer this, but I suspect it might not necessarily be a role DMV is looking for.
Chair McEwen and Representative Gorsuch, it might present unique challenges to DMV to be making the kinds of decisions of who wins and who loses in that kind of a situation.
That was an excellent answer.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
Madam Chair.
Representative McLean.
Well, we've done a really good job, I think, in all of our informational sessions, getting background information that we need for evidently things that are coming to us next week, possibly, right? Is that right?
Monday will be license plate day.
Okay.
So then, the Transportation Committee.
Complete, what is it called? Transparency here. You know, I've had a person come to me that's a constituent that has asked for one of these plates, mm-hmm. and it was a pretty heartfelt story. And so I think I must be on that, you know, on that Monday meeting too. But I guess my feeling is that you've done a really good job of kind of trying to stay neutral and try to make some very good points on what are the challenges of this program, what are the differences between this program, and what maybe are some of the challenges for both the legislative body or the department, no matter who has it, right? So I think that's really good. Okay. But I don't want us to go too far, because I feel like the people who came to us that want to be here on Monday should have a neutral listening body, right?
Ms. Joyce, I'm sorry, Representative Bentz, please.
Thank you. So if I've been checking to see if other states sell space on these plates and raise big piles of money for the general fund, and Texas is doing that, and they've raised a grand sum of $58,000. And they apparently contracted with a private company to manage this instead of the DMV. The question, I guess, would be, in the past, have you been asked or the department been asked to figure out how valuable that advertising space is, and so that you can disabuse us of thinking that there's millions to be garnered by selling space on these plates? and we can move on to some the current approach, which I understand to be making sure that we don't actually have to spend state money on plates, because I think that's the approach now, is to make sure we don't lose money on this program. And as, so I just want to flip it and say, is there any way we could be making money? And if not, then we can stick with the let's not lose any approach.
Chair McEwen and Representative Bentz, I don't know that we've looked at all into selling advertising space on the plates. I'm trying to think. I know our Federal Highway Administration has some very strong thoughts about selling any kind of advertising that's on its roadways. But I'd have to look into whether that's where that's done. I would look into the Texas model. So I'm not familiar with that one. But two, you raised a good point about not losing any money on the plates. Yeah. You know, I think I may have skipped over in my presentation the fact that while this is a registration plate, the fundraising aspect of it is not eligible for highway funds. So the folks who propose these need to come up with a different source of money to do this, both the startup costs and the ongoing administration costs. So if money is lost in this venture, it's the organizations who are losing money. And I think at last count, the kids plate, which was to raise money to combat child abuse, so far has been it might be just about a wash in terms of what they had to pay to get started up and what they brought in. And now they are retired and have sold out all of their plates.
Yeah, thank you. So the question is, when you say it's just about a wash, does that take into account your time and all the other time, not necessarily these hearings, but just the ongoing, everyday administration of this plate program? Are we staying even?
Chair McEwen and Representative Bentz, there is a calculation, an administrative calculation that's done to compensate for the time spent by staff on the sort of fundraising aspect of it. I would say that the calculation probably doesn't cover everything. It really can't.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Joyce, I have a couple questions. Do you have a sense of how many of these things have actually been successful for the participants? Has anybody raised a bunch of money for a private nonprofit doing this?
Chair McEwen, yes, some have. I think you saw from that chart, you know, the Crater Lake plate has been tremendously successful. And I think part of it, there are so many factors, I think, that I've observed over time about what goes into the relative success or relative lack of success of a plate. And for Crater Lake, you know, it had the benefit of being very early on. I think at the time there was only one other plate. It's a very attractive looking plate. It also has the benefit of being a very inexpensive plate. It's $20 one time and you're done. That's not the case for a lot of these plates. Pacific Wonderland is $100, now only one time, but that's an expensive plate. Some of these are $60 or $30 at issuance, and then every time you renew. So there are different reasons these things are more or less successful. You know, the group plate isn't at the field office and isn't displayed in the field office, so it makes it a little harder. People have to work a little harder to advertise, so there are just tons of factors about why they're successful or not.
Okay. And just one other question. I want to understand something that you said, and is it true that there's a limited number of specialty plates that we can have at any one time? Is that correct?
Chair McEwen, yes, that's what the statute says.
So when I look at the chart that you have before us, we already have five that are active. Mm-hmm. So if we approve any of these, we have to retire one of the others. Is that correct?
Yeah, Chair McEwen, there are really two options. One is to follow the existing statute and choose one to retire when you bring another one on. The other one is to simply change the number in the statute, or as several of the bills do that are before you, simply get rid of the limit altogether. Mm-hmm. But the whole construct that was set up in 2003 was really to set a limit and have the legislature make the measured decision of which ones are we going to keep and which ones are we going to retire.
And should this committee choose to approve one of the specialty plates that is proposed, who decides which one goes inactive should that statute stay in place?
Chair McEwen, the statute says that is the purview of the legislature.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you so much, Ms. Joyce. Was anyone else here today? No, this isn't a hearing. This was an informational opportunity for us to learn a little bit more about this issue as we approach License Plate Day on Monday. So I guess we don't need anyone else coming before us at this time. Next we have on our agenda... Perfect timing. Our vice chair has reemerged.
Sorry, they're still going next door.
That's fine. Good. We will be removing House Bill 2841 from the agenda today. That will not be heard today. So we will move on to House Bill 2236. I will open a work session on House Bill 2236 and look to Mr. Brennan to get us up to speed here.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2236, we heard this way back on February 25th. This measure directs monies from the state agency assessments used to provide public transportation services to city transit agencies. It applies to wages paid to state agency employees during the calendar quarters beginning on or after the measure's effective date, and the measure, if enacted, would take effect on the 91st day following adjournment sine die. We have no amendments on this measure. We have received what are called fiscal and revenue light impact statements because this measure has a subsequent referral to the Ways and Means Committee. So that would be where it's headed if the committee moves it out of committee, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. Vice Chair Davis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can I make a brief statement about the bill before
Certainly.
I make a motion? There had been some question from DAS apparently about this bill and whether or not it might require double payment for state employees, and I just want to clarify that that would not take place because cities can only levy taxes within their city limits. So even if a city provides transit service outside its city limits, there would be no ability to collect taxes for employers outside the city limits. And there was another clarifying issue where a transit district has service territory inside city limits that districts can levy payroll taxes within that territory and the city cannot. This is clarified in the language of the bill by referring to the service area of a city transit agency. My apologies. I was asked to put it on the record, and in abundance of caution, I have now done so.
And Vice Chair Davis, there's no amendment necessary. It just
no amendment necessary. It's clear as is.
All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2236 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill. Do we still have a Ways and Means reference? And that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Davis moves House Bill 2236 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Representative Bentz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say that I think it's a very odd way to do what we're doing. I'll support the bill, but. I wish we'd manage transit better than this.
Thank you. Anyone else? Seeing none, noting Representative Bentz's comments, the motion, without any further objections, the motion passes. Thank you. I will close the hearing on 2236, and we will open a hearing on House Bill 2259. Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2259 modifies the authority of the Department of Transportation to issue variance permits to operate self-loading log trucks. It also authorizes the Department to issue a refund for payment of fuel tax if a person pays both fuel tax and a road assessment fee. At the time we heard this was on March 11th. Since then, we have received a statement of minimal revenue impact and a statement of no fiscal impact. There are no amendments. And, Madam Chair, this is a chance for, well, I can get to that after. Maybe I should make that notation before the motion. Since the requester of the bill has recommended that this would be a good candidate, should the committee decide to do so for the consent calendar? And should the committee wish to decide to do so, Madam Chair, the motion would be to move to the floor with a due pass recommendation and be placed on the consent calendar. But that is up to the role of the committee.
Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2259 to the floor with the due pass recommendation and have it placed on the consent calendar.
Representative Gorsuch moves House Bill 2259 to the floor with a due pass recommendation to be placed on the consent calendar. Is there any discussion? Objections? Seeing none, motion carries.
And we will close the hearing on House Bill 2259. And we will, moving right along, open a hearing on, actually, in our agenda right now, we have House Bill 2643. We are going to be holding this over to Wednesday, March the 25th. And move on to opening a work session on House Bill 2837. Mr. Brennan, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 2837 directs the Department of Transportation to issue a certificate of exemption from the requirement to use child safety system, safety belt, or safety harnesses on the basis of a nurse practitioner or physician assistant submitting a statement on behalf of the person requesting the exemption. We heard this bill on the 11th as well. It has no fiscal or revenue impact. The measure has no subsequent referrals. So it's before us as is, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Vice Chair Gorsuch.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2837 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gorsuch moves House Bill 2837 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. We will close the hearing. Oh, we need a carrier. Is there an, yes, Representative.
I'll carry it if you want me to, but I don't need to.
Was there a request from Representative Gomberg to do so?
There was not, no.
This is Representative Gomberg's bill.
Okay.
So if you don't object,
no,
I think he would be happy if we assigned it to him without any objection.
That makes sense.
We will assign to Representative Gomberg and close the hearing on House Bill 2837. And we will open a hearing on House Bill 2981. Again, Mr. Brennan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This measure, House Bill 2981, we heard on the 13th of March. It directs the Department of Transportation to erect and maintain a Fallen Hero roadside memorial sign for Specialist Mabry James Anders. This measure would take effect upon passage and signature by the governor. There are no amendments. It has no fiscal or revenue impact, Madam Chair.
Vice Chair Davis.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2981 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Davis moves House Bill 2981 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, motion passes. And do we have Representative Bentz? Yeah. Thank you very much. And moving right along. I believe there is more work to be done on House Joint Memorial 5, so we will be moving that to Wednesday, March 25th, I believe, is the day. And since we've already had our informational meeting on the license plate programs, is there anything else for the good of the order before this committee today? That last part went very quickly. Mm-hmm. Very quickly. Mm-hmm. Many today. That last part went.